Hello, and welcome to TNT, the Technology and Things podcast. Your host, Paul Ferraro, is a former IT exec and currently a technology advisor. Jeff Krueger, a fellow technology enthusiast, is the co-host. They both spent many years working for a Fortune 500 company and are both passionate about leadership, technology, and the community.
Well, thank you, Katie, for coming on our podcast today. This is awesome.
Thanks for having me.
This is so cool. I mean, I didn't ever think we'd have the Katie Temple on our TNT podcast, Jeff.
I know. It's impressive.
Well, I think if you guys really wanted to talk about NAS and SAN, you knew who to call.
I remember
that's a really good point.
I remember when we used to talk about NAS and SAN, you were like, okay, let's go over this one more time. Why are these things like, one is spelled, what are they like?
They're anagrams. Yeah, it's an anagram.
It's like, what the hell? I could just imagine coming into this industry like you did, into our tech industry, and all these acronyms and nonsense and everything. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, in my role, I'm like, I go into a new company and they have, it's like a Qualcomm where they've got all these acronyms and stuff. And you're going like, what does all this mean? It takes a lot of, I mean, it's crazy.
So you're having to relearn that kind of stuff or
yeah.
Just learn new stuff?
It's new stuff and new tech. And then, but also just like learning how these companies work, and they've all got these like acronyms and ways, you know, organizations that it's all just like this lingo that, undertow of everything that
DMG, IT,
yeah,
SOC, you know.
That's like the hardest part for me is like learn the names, the people's names and the organizations and just learning all that stuff, which I kind of love, but it's when you don't have access to all the data and you have to get it from people, like, you know, like Katie, like you used to have to do, it's like, that's not easy.
And then you try to kind of think about, I don't know if you do this, but you try to listen to see which phrases that company's using more than others, where that's kind of more important to them than the other things.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What? Yeah. So that's been wild, but we're not here to talk about that. You just celebrated this week 3 years in business. You founded your own business 3 years ago, Katie Temple Media Coaching. Great website, by the way.
Thank you.
It's awesome. It looks really good.
Wow. Coming from you too. That's a compliment.
It's a good website. I like the media on it. You got video on there. You got it all. I mean, you got pictures, you've got a lot of content on there actually.
Thanks.
So
I'm glad
you obviously worked hard on that.
That was the first, my stepbrother, it's funny because my stepbrother runs all of the 3D at Pixar.
Mm.
So clearly very creative and talented. And we were on a family trip to Mexico, and I had said, you know, I think I want to do this thing. And he's the kind of guy that can whip up something with his eyes closed. And so he created the first website. And honestly, I gave him my reel from when I was in TV, gave him some talking points, and he took care of it on his own. He's just one of those crazy talented people. And so he launched it for me. I didn't even know what I was looking at because I didn't have to do that when I was with you guys, right?
Yep.
So now we're in this new world. And then I've also had another friend and colleague who works on branding that updates it and kind of cleans it up here and there.
Nice.
Named Ginger Hill. So that's how that started. But I love it. Here we are in Mexico. And he says, okay, well, let's do this and this and this. It's like magic.
Those are good people to, mm-hmm. to have in your life.
That's right. And Jeffrey's the ones like that want you to that want you to succeed. I know you guys are good.
Yeah, whenever Paul needs his house messed up, like his electronics, in about half hour, I can unplug everything and replug it in a way he has no idea what's going to go on.
You know, like, and you're always so confident about
skill.
It.
Like, yeah.
What are you worried about? What are you worried about, Paul? I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Jeffrey,
no
I just go, hey, Jeffrey, want to start a podcast up? He's like, cool, let's do it. Go buy all the stuff.
Let's buy some stuff, yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's talk to the boss.
Yeah.
First client was Tony Gwynn.
Tony Gwynn Jr., yes.
Tony Gwynn Jr.
Isn't that was...
But he goes by Tony Gwynn now,
he
it looks
does.
Like, right? Yeah.
He does.
That's
was
cool.
Anthony, and it's now Tony. Because he's got, I don't know how much you guys have paid attention to him, but he has a lot going on. Because he's got a sports talk radio show that he hosts 5 days a week with Chris Ello. And then he also does pre and post game stuff for Fox Sports San
oh, wow.
Diego. And then he also does in game. He sits in the booth and breaks down the game as well with the play by play and color guy with Don Arcillo and Mark Grant.
Nice.
And Mark Sweeney sometimes. So he's got a lot going on. And then he does other things for them too, other kind of magazine style shows and blogs and those vlogs. not blogs, vlogs.
Vlogs, yeah.
So he's busy, and he had just retired and wanted to be a broadcaster, and so we helped him with that transition. And still work with him in the off season, which is great. I love it when someone that busy wants to work in the off season because he wants to be great.
Yeah. You mean you keep working at getting better at being on camera and...
Yep. And he'll say, hey, I want to talk about this. I don't like the way this is working. I want to work on my messaging. And can we you know, have a couple sessions? Absolutely. That's what I love, is that he keeps kind of chipping away at it.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I mean, that's great. And I mean, you talked about his credentials. I mean, you've got kind of a... I was looking at your sort of list of things here, from a sports anchor, a sports reporter, a sideline reporter. You covered football, baseball, the Olympics, probably a whole bunch of other things. I mean, when you kind of look at it all, it's pretty impressive.
Thank you. It was a long, you know, I've been, you, that you hear these phrases that your parents give you, and then you think, I understand what they're talking about. I've been around a little longer, so I have... When you look at those things, you can't believe where all the time went, but I'm definitely proud of that run.
It's amazing. I mean, and then the places, NFL Network, Fox, XETV, San Diego Chargers, Media One, KFMB, Channel 8. And you won an Emmy too?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
We won an Emmy, a very talented photojournalist and I, when I was at Fox 6 here on a Little League team in East San Diego. And it was a blast. I mean, that's a good teamwork.
Oh, very cool.
But that was fun, and you're proud, and you know, your parents are proud.
How is it you ever worked with us? we just you know, like, hook up computers and things.
She it was a downturn, and she, yeah, you know,
that was a really bad economy. It must have been a really bad economy.
Well, your guys helped me a lot. Your guys helped me a lot. I definitely learned on the job.
Yeah. And are you applying your SAN and NAS skills in your new media coaching career?
Not my SAN and NAS, but when I have clients that are in the business, I can understand the lingo, and all the project management skills I've developed are really helpful as a business owner.
Yeah.
I will say that, and I've randomly reached out to Dean a couple times, my boss at Bedrock at the time, just randomly, just to say, listen, I'm using these skills that I learned for my new business, and I appreciate that.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yeah. That's cool. So, that is awesome.
Yeah, Yeah, project management's super helpful for, you know, pretty much everything.
Yes.
And getting things done.
And following up.
Oh, yeah.
Following up.
That's a big job. Big part of the job.
Yeah, I don't have to walk around and look for, you know, in the cubicles and just check on guys and see how it's going. It's all kind of more email.
Sometimes I walk around buildings now in cubicles, and I'm like the vendor guy in the office wandering around, and it's like, I'm like, it feels so weird because I don't want to bother anybody. And I'm trying to just like go to the restroom, and they're like, "Hey, Paul." And I'm like, I'm just going to the restroom. I'm not trying to be that guy, you know,
be the one that I used
that's
to
bothering
like,
you, yeah. You know, and it's like, it's a fine line.
What
it's
if you walked line. Up to one of the people that you didn't work with in the cubicle farm, and you just said, "Hey, what's the status on this project? I need to know right now."
Yeah.
Cause the boss is going to, you know, give me a hard time.
I'll try that.
Yeah.
I'll try that and see. Just what, see
like
what
a social
happens.
Experiment. See how they react.
Are there a bunch of other vendors around, like the bullpen?
It's not as bad as... I mean, those were... Putting like multiple vendors together in a bullpen was probably one of the like the cruelest things that we ever did.
That was interesting, yeah.
Because I think about it now, and it's like, oh, that's tough. That was
and
tough.
I was so naive, I wouldn't have known the difference. I remember fundamentally thinking, huh... What is this? Are we?
Is this
I think
okay?
We were just like sadistic or something. We were just, I don't know.
I think we just didn't have a lot of office space, right. And we didn't have a lot of options. So
that's
we just,
true.
We made it work. Right. And
well, Jeff and I always had, we talked to Norm about this too. We loved the whole bullpen idea. Mm-hmm. None of our team liked it, really. Jeff and I liked it, but the team didn't really want to be all like in a bullpen, really. So it never really took off.
But yeah,
which is kind of what Norm's trying to do, right?
I actually wanted to work in the bullpen as well, and
we were
boss,
told we could
my
not.
Boss was like, "No way, you're not moving out of your office. Like, that's not going to be good."
Yeah, we felt like it would be better to have the managers there, and that we would get a lot done because we could compress all that checking in, right? Because we're just all sitting there, and you can just say like, "Hey, that thing got done," or hey, did that thing get done? Yeah, that thing got done. And it just compresses, or at least that's what we thought it was going to do.
Well, and you guys could have, that would have been a good environment, again, to solve problems quickly, too, besides asking if things got done. But, you know, you're trying to find these amazing creative solutions.
Yes.
Your team had a lot of pressure, just by definition. And you could have just, you know, you handle things, you brainstorm quickly, kind of like a newsroom.
Yeah. I actually saw you do that when I did a tour with you. Which was that channel?
CBS 8.
CBS 8. And you were producing a segment or something, right? And you were looking at footage and you were like writing. And I mean, it was intense. I was nervous for you, going like, you're going on in like 15 minutes or something and you got to come up with all this.
I know. It was good that it was fun that you guys got to see what that was like.
Yeah.
And you come in and it's kind of hurry up and wait, where the games that you're going to cover are going to be on later. And so you're kind of prepping a little bit. And then it's one of those things where deadlines are deadlines.
There's not much you can do, though, in advance, right?
There's not much
you can do, no. Because you have to wait for the thing to happen and then find the cool parts. And,
yes.
And you're... Is it the video producer, the guy that's kind of like
a producer, yes,
looking at the footage and finding interesting things? And
right, and there's all kinds of feeds that you're looking at and that you're taking down. And it's one of those things where that's one of the skills of TV, is being able to nail something, go with it really quickly, decide what you're going to say quickly, and be okay with the other stuff that you maybe wanted to get across and you couldn't.
Yeah,
you know, you just got to you know that you have a time limit and you get in and get out.
Yeah,
that sort of reminds me of the part of our job that I thought Paul and I always enjoyed, which was, I kind of like the emergencies or the hyper urgent project, like the thing that had to get done in 2 days. We got to stand up some site for some demo, and it's like there's no way you can get all that done, and then you just figure out how we're going to get it done anyway, you know, or any of those things. And I like that sort of real time problem solving. It reminds me of that situation you're talking about, where you're like watching the game and thinking about what you're about to say in a couple minutes, and you know the pressure's on.
Pressure's on.
Yeah.
And it's fun. And for you guys, you just had a lot of pressure coming down. I mean, if your stuff broke down, the guys that you were supporting, now we're talking about unhappy customers.
Yeah.
And that's pretty stressful.
But you get kind of used to it, and it feels good. And like Jeffrey said, that those sometimes those crazy deadlines can be, it's just like you got to figure it out and cut through all kinds of red tape or whatever. And it's actually more enjoyable than we've got 9 months to do this. And
how do we do this work? Now Katie's interviewing us.
Like, yeah. She's good. Obviously, she's good.
Well, I'm trying to think of your audience, right? Your audience. Who's your audience with the podcast that you found?
There's millions of people. I don't know. I'm kidding.
I love it.
Are we counting you in the audience, or
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
And us too? I don't.
are they mostly technical, minded people, or is it just kind of a little of your support staff? Anybody that you've met?
Honestly, clients of ours, we've got those. It's people new to tech. I've got emails from people that are sort of new that are like, hey, this is pretty cool. Learning some. And then some people that have been in the industry a while. So it's kind of a mixture. And what the feedback that we've gotten is that since we've sort of bring a kind of a diverse set of people. So sometimes it's talking to a CIO, sometimes it's talking to a business. I kind of like the leadership parts of it, and people that are trying to start businesses or do, like, I kind of like the entrepreneur type of side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we've talked to people that are, you know, young guys that started up a little tech company, both like 20 years old. So, you know, anyone that's trying to make it, I kind of gravitate to those.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's been good. We got some good feedback.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
But stop interviewing us.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
It's not, I mean, you
I'm
know
just
how it is.
I'm
instinct.
I'm totally kidding.
Uh-huh.
You got a bachelor's degree in communications from St. Mary's College, right? Were you always interested in going into TV broadcasting and this kind of thing? Or
I did. I figured out that I wanted to do that in high school. I was doing kind of a local. I grew up in Merced, California, which is in the Central Valley.
Yep.
And I did a local TV show. I got lucky. I was doing a local TV show, and I was playing sports my whole life. and I just really loved it. It made sense. And when I was a little girl, it's not, I mean, I had a dream to be an Olympic athlete, a volleyball player, because I love that game. But it's not like you can look up to these pro levels to play at that time. When we were younger, they didn't really exist.
Yeah.
So I just thought, wow, I love sports. Maybe I should just talk about them for a living. So I did. I went to St. Mary's. They had a good journalism program. They didn't have a good broadcasting program at that time. But I did learn how about journalism, fundamentally ethics and how to write longer format and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good way to get started. And then when I left, I just kind of, you know, that's when I just kind of locked in and tried to find my way. And I didn't get my first full-time on-air job until I was 26. So I hustled and grinded because I knew what I wanted to do. I just couldn't get there. And I, you know, you're kind of just going and then you get this lead and then you go this way and then you get this lead and you go this way and kind of find your way. So
yeah, it sounds like the hustling is the key.
The hustling is the key and just keep and then continuing just to go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Because they say, you know, at that time you go to a small market. The idea was you go to a small market and make a lot of mistakes and then you go to a bigger market and a bigger market. But I wasn't getting any love from any of these small markets that I was applying for. And then I finally got a reel together as when I was in Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta in 93 and I was working for Fox Sports at the time, which was Turner Sports. And I was a production coordinator. So essentially I was working with the executive producer and making sure all the talent was getting their travel taken care of. And I was doing a lot of administrative stuff. And I just said, they had a lot of rights to various games and broadcasting. Like they had the rights for the Atlanta Hawks and the Atlanta Braves and all the SEC and ACC sports out there in Atlanta because the network was seen in 7 states. And so I just told my boss, if you have anything, any programs that you need a sideline reporter for or a reporter, and you know, no one wants to do it, I'll do it. And so that's how that worked. So I just kind of...
You got yourself into a... Sort of you were in the right place doing not necessarily work that you wanted to do, but it was close to the work that you wanted to do so that you were able to be there and like, hey, raise your hand, kind of like, I'm ready, put me in.
Right? And so they did. And I got enough to put a reel together, as they say, which is a resume. And
what is that? That's inside lingo there.
So a reel is just if you two were just trying to apply for either an award or to get, you know, with maybe iHeartRadio, for example, or whatever for your podcast, what you would do is you would have somebody take the best clips of them and make it short. And that's a resume reel.
Yeah.
So it's kind of high leveling all of your accomplishments. And in TV, you can't look... They're not going to hire you unless they've seen you. It's different now because everybody has their own ass, you know, there's YouTube channels and all that. But when I was doing
it. Yeah, there was none of that.
No, yeah. There was none of that. You were lucky if someone opened up your tape.
Wow. Yeah, because it had to actually go into a machine.
It was a tape. Yeah, and then you put it in an envelope or you drop it by. And then, you know, you just hope that they'd even open it.
That seems expensive, too, because you got to make a lot of copies. And
yes.
Did they rewind? Were they kind?
Yes. Yes.
Were they kind and rewind?
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy. So it's like you got to put together your portfolio and then send it out. And
and then hope for the best. And so the first job I got, ironically, was in Fresno, which is an hour south of where I grew up. So for me, that was an amazing experience. It was a good market. They have a university there. And then the Giants AAA baseball team came when I was there. And they have a lot of... The Fresno is a breeding ground for a lot of athletes, so that was the other thing. So that was a great start for me.
Nice. That's super cool. We actually just spoke to Akbar Bajad Villamila last week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And he had a similar, because he wanted to get into broadcasting, and he had, you know, he had really hadn't done anything. And he was talking about the hustle and, you know, going and saying, hey, I'll work for free and all that, which was... You know, just to get the, like you said, actually CS Keys, which we talked about it before we started, he also gave him a huge break and let him come on his show. And, you know, it's like, hey, anytime you want to come on, you just come on. And that way he could kind of build that reel.
Right.
And just get experience and everything. And had like a ton of advice for him around, you know, I think acting class and different things to help. But
plus he has the background, the knowledge of the sport too. Akbar does. Yeah. So that's, you know, he's going to get attention before he opens his mouth.
You know, I was going to ask you a sports question because I meant to ask Akbar this. He was talking about, you know, different positions that he had played, and you know, you learn a defensive end position, and then you get moved to some other kind of position, and it is super difficult because you have to go learn that whole new position, and like the amount of football you have to kind of learn for each position. Who has to know the most on the team?
I mean, I would say the quarterback.
Is it quarterback?
Yes.
Is that the...
And the offensive line needs to, is also, they're a brainy group.
Mm-hmm.
But the quarterback has to remember all of the plays. I think the thing with position switching, I mean, I didn't play in the NFL, but a lot of these guys, and I'm sure Akbar, this applied to Akbar, but a lot of them have been playing so long that they've played a lot of different positions.
Yeah.
So there's a little familiarity with those positions, and then they need just to hone in. But it's a lot, especially because they don't have a lot of time when they do that.
Yeah, he was talking about the class, you know, the classroom, and the amount of kind of classroom time that you go through is pretty intense.
Yeah.
So it was, anyways. But it was I had told him that because of you, I had met C.S. Keys, and we did the trivia and all that stuff down at the Tilted Kilt, and I was like, I know C.S. Keys.
And we won.
Yeah. And we won once or twice.
Once or twice, yeah.
It was a tough group down there.
Yep. But CS did a show, I was saying, in this area, right? I think it was in this.
In the suite.
It could have even been in this suite where CS was doing his stuff.
Yeah, that was cool. Okay, so we talked about kind of getting into the business and all that. Any, like, fun stories that you could tell us?
From my broadcasting days, I think I have a lot of fun stories. I remember when I was younger, covering the Padres from 99 to 05, I was here on the air at Fox 6.
That was a fun time to cover them, huh?
It was. I was in a city where they had an NFL team, and the Padres were playing well.
Yeah.
And that was a good time, so 99 to 05. And then I left in 05. You know, I got to be around when Petco came. I remember...
when was that?
I'm trying to think. 2002 or 3. Hmm. But I remember when the Giants were in town, and I went in when I was playing for the Padres, when I was covering the Padres. And I remember I needed to get Barry Bonds. And I walked in, and I remember... He was kind of down. He was bending over, tying his shoes. It's one of those things where, especially when you're a young reporter, and you know, there's some certain players that are pretty intimidating, and he was one of them because I had heard that he was a little surly with the media, and it was just funny because I remember I walked in and it took everything I had to go in there. You know, if you've got these guys that you're covering regularly, you build these relationships and you can get over that, and then you know when they're ready to talk or not. But then when you've got the players coming in from out of town, and you know, especially if it's a Tiger Woods or a Barry Bonds at that time or Sammy Sosa, when you better get them. So I walk in there and I'm waiting and then he's tying his shoe and I said, "Hey Barry, do you have a minute?" And he looked at me and said, "No."
Oh man.
And I thought, okay, ouch. I mean that's all you do. But I don't.
And then what happened after that?
That was it.
You just had to bail.
That's it. Then I had to bail. It's one of those things where sometimes when you just if the Giants were in town at the time, you have to get Barry Bonds. Mm-hmm. If the Buick Invitational, which is now the Farmers, at the time I was covering, there was the Buick Invitational, which is now the Farmers Golf Tournament at Torrey Pines, and then there was match play at Carlsbad, which is no longer there. But that's one of those things where, you know, I don't interview these golf guys regularly, but you better get Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care where he is, if he's on the leaderboard or not, although he was always on the leaderboard when I was covering him.
Yeah.
But there's certain things where your news directors, you get them. That's it. And so there's a pressure in that business where I don't know what else to tell you. He told me no.
Yeah. They're like, you didn't do it.
And then there's other times where you get Tiger, and you know, Tiger at the time, he's warmed up so much and he's such a different persona now, but he wasn't going to give you anything.
Right.
So it's just frustrating because you think, okay, I know I have to get Tiger. I have to bust my, you know what, to find Tiger, make sure I get a good shot and blah, blah, blah. And then he doesn't say anything. But these are just kind of the things.
Why is that? Why didn't he say anything?
Well, he was really good at just not saying anything to the media about his game. You know, there's certain people that are colorful and are good storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some athletes that are really good at that. And at that time, Tiger was very protected and just, you know, kind of, if you had to draw it out of him.
Who was that football player up in Seattle? Was it that used to like just?
Oh, Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, uh-huh. he was hilarious uh-huh. because he would. What was it, some he, of the stuff he would say?
He
was,
would just say
like. I'm here because I'm paid to be here.
Right.
Or something like
and
that.
And he would say, next question. He had these little phrases.
Yeah.
Where,
but he never actually answered anything.
No, not at all. And he was playing well. And he's a beast. He was.
He was playing great. Yeah, but uh-huh. it was like, hey, how did this go? And he just go, I'm just paid. I have to be here for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And he would just respond with that.
Right. And there's when you're a younger reporter, that's pretty, you know, now I'm a little older and wiser and you know how to handle those situations. But when you're young and these guys, you know, you need to get them and they don't want to talk and they're prickly. It can be a little intimidating.
I bet. Yeah.
But it's nice when you cover a beat, like when I was covering the Chargers or the Padres and I was there almost every day, or when I was covering the Atlanta Braves 2006, 2007, 2008, and I was with them every day. Then that's a whole different ballgame.
Right.
You get a relationship.
You get a relationship.
Yeah.
And in baseball, it's such a grind, a baseball season. The players really kind of, number one, trust you because you've proven that, but also they admire the fact that they know that you're in there every day.
You're grinding out with them. Yeah.
Yep. If they go into extra innings and you travel from Atlanta to New York and you don't get in until 4 a.m. and you're with them and you're all sitting around in the lobby waiting for your bags, everyone's tired because you know you have to be at the ballpark the next day at 10. There's a kind of a respect there, a mutual respect there.
You don't start interviewing them at 4 a.m., do you?
No, but those would be good stories. Can you imagine you're in the lobby, everyone's cranky, and they're waiting for their bags, and, hey, can I get a second?
Yeah, you're like, I'd like to go to sleep now.
Yeah, let's talk about what you ate on the plane.
Oh.
That's great. So what sort of led you to starting your own
company?
Yeah.
I had always wanted to do that because I loved my TV career. I loved everything about it. And I also got my, you know what, kicked a lot in that business. And I always kind of felt like I'd love to have had a little more help. And the other thing is that I'm just sympathetic about all of the insecurities and fear that everybody goes through, mm-hmm. or mostly everybody.
Yeah.
I know you guys don't.
Oh, no. We're fine. Yeah.
I had worked for a media coach when I was young, in my 20s before I got on TV. And I just always thought, I don't know, I always thought that that's what I wanted to do. And I took, as you know, I went in and worked in technology for about 6 years, which was something I never saw coming, but it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. But I still kind of had that tearing and I thought, I'm just going to do it. And I'm not really well thought out or planned. I just jumped off the cliff. I was having a conversation with John Boggs, who's Tony's agent, and I knew that he needed somebody, and so I just kind of did it.
Nice. You just were like, hey, I'm jumping in.
I can help you. Yeah, I'm going to jump in. So it wasn't kind of well thought out, but I'm grateful that it's been 3 years.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the process? Like, mm-hmm. How does media coaching actually work? What do you do?
It kind of depends on what the client needs, but there is a foundation that I've created where whether it's a presentation, I mean, I've got clients that are going to speak in front of the media, who are going to create videos, who are have presentations, who are doing a lot of technology people that are doing pitches to investors.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. A lot of that we work on because, as you know, a lot of these guys and some women are so talented and have worked so hard at these amazing kind of technologies that they haven't had time to worry about how they're presenting.
Right.
And you have people in your industry who have all this information, and all of a sudden now they're a CEO of a company and have to be customer and people facing, but they don't have those skills.
Right.
So it kind of depends on what people need. But I start off with whether it's presentation or on-camera fundamentals. So we talk about the fundamentals, essentially a checklist that everyone needs to know before you're having any opportunity, whether you interview for a job, create a video, speak to the media, or doing a talk. And then I work on the messaging and the storytelling, and then I work on the delivery. So it's three-prong. It's fundamentals. Now, how much work do we need to do to craft your message? Is it already crafted? Should I work with your branding team? Do you just need to make it concise? and like if I'm creating videos, so I've got two financial clients right now where I'm acting as a production company and they want to create videos. So now we're dealing with, okay, let's take your information and make it concise. We got to get in and get out on video,
right.
Make it concise and authentic and relatable. And then now let's worry about all of this stuff, whether it's nerves, eye contact, filler words, intonation, breathing, pausing.
She seems to really know her stuff, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we need a media coach.
I think we do.
I don't think we can afford Katie Campbell.
You guys do not need
I looked on the website. There's a free, we could get a free
consultation.
I was thinking we could, Jeffrey and I could do that.
I think what we need is going to be a lot more expensive than free. I don't think that'll get us very far.
We could do trade for my technology support.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Do you need a lot of technology support?
Let me ask you, do you think I need a lot of technology support?
Well, I don't. Every business is different.
Yeah, how much technology are you dealing with now?
Not a lot. Not yet. I haven't dived into that. The technology that I use is my computer and my presentations, and then I'm not doing a ton of social right now. I do it just try to be intentional with the social media.
Yeah.
Because I haven't gotten to that next level yet.
Yeah.
And then I use videographers and director of photography
perfect.
To handle all the.
So you bring them in.
Yep.
For depending on, like you said, if it's you're creating a video or you're mm-hmm. trying to help them on TV or, mm-hmm. or whatnot.
Yes. Yeah, so if I'm creating a video, I bring in my videographers to help shoot them and light them and make them look great and edit them and those kind of things. So it's almost like, honestly, it's like being in TV again, where we're telling somebody's story,
mm-hmm.
which I love. So I can produce that and help them. When we're creating the videos, I'm there live spot on helping them get through this. Sometimes they don't need a lot of help. Sometimes they need a lot of help. And then if I'm doing what I do with corporations who the other reason I bring in a videographer is if people want to, what's really valuable is when we shoot people and watch them, whether they're getting ready for an interview or a talk or speaking to the media, it's really nice for them to get the idea of what it's like to have a professional videographer there with lights and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And it's really good way for people to see what that whole thing feels like to have a mic in your face asking questions.
Yep.
And also having to see what you look like, because a lot of it is playing back on the projector or the monitor and saying, okay, let's talk about what you like here, what you don't like. Now let's figure out how to get you better. And that's invaluable because it's mortifying.
Yes.
It's absolutely mortifying for everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. No one wants to hear themselves. No one wants to see themselves. Yeah. And I just say, just promise me you're going to be comfortable with the uncomfortable, because it took me years in my TV business to be comfortable looking at myself. Years.
Yeah.
But if you can think of it as strategy, and I promise you that we will make you better, and that's going to help your confidence, and then eventually you won't be scared to look at yourself.
I'm with you on that, because I do a lot of the editing for our podcast. So listening back to your
listening
voice
to
is sometimes brutal, because it's like, oh, but you get over it. But it after many hours of listening to yourself.
It's repetition, right?
Yeah.
It's repetition. And then if you can take away the insecurity and the emotional attachment, which is normal, then and realize, okay, this is a business decision. This has to sound better. So we're moving on.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's a really good way sometimes, depending on what the client, how the client learns. But if you can kind of make it business decisions versus all the emotional and insecurities that this stuff brings up, then it's helpful.
It's really cool. I mean, it's great to see you being successful with this business. And like I said, I was being silly earlier when I said, obviously, you know what you're doing. I mean, but, it's impressive.
Yeah, like the depth that you've gone into, just explaining it in your various different clients. It's obviously not a little side project.
No.
You're full-time doing this.
I am.
Oh,
I am. Yes, I've dived in 110%.
Awesome.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
So I love it, yeah.
One of the other things that, in addition to your full-time company, is you do a lot of other things for the community, from mentoring to your work with City of Hope and the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society. I mean, how do you have time for all this other stuff too? I mean, it's a lot of other things too.
I just think that's why we're here.
Yeah.
I just do. And I think that's why we're here. I think that because I can MC and because I can host those are skills that I can use to help people raise money, number one. And number two, I think that for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, when I, you know, I got nominated to be a Woman of the Year candidate, which is this bizarre thing. But my thought was, you know, if this guy thinks that I can raise money and help Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which is Jack Kelly, who's the guy that nominated me, he had recently lost his mom to multiple or to AML, which is a blood cancer. And I just thought, you know, what else are we here for?
Yeah.
And so I did. And I think that the other thing is, and, you know, I don't have kids. And so I have a little more time to do that kind of stuff. You know, I don't have to worry about getting people to soccer practice or doing their homework and that kind of thing. And so I feel like that's, I just feel a responsibility and I love that.
That's great.
And I love mentoring too, because I could have used more of it.
We're going to get to the mentoring, but on the raising money part, you raised $40,000 for the Lymphoma and Leukemia San Diego chapter. How did you do that?
In 10 weeks.
That's
tremendous.
That was in 10 weeks too?
Yes.
How do you do that? Because raising money is hard.
I think, and this has been a whole experience with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, because the guy that was Man of the Year, Gordon Cook, who had multiple myeloma in the same amount of time, raised $175,000. So you kind of find your way. I mean, if I were going to do it again, I would do things probably differently. But we did. I had, honestly, I just kind of like my business. I dove into it. We found out. We committed. A week, I think, or that day when the whole thing started. And I had a I got lucky. I have a dear friend who would said, I'll be your campaign manager, because another mutual friend of ours had done it. And he said, you need a campaign manager. And I didn't even know what to do or who to ask. And so Nancy Hughes, who's a dear friend of mine, said, I'm on board. And she was a beast.
Wow.
And she, I could not, and this isn't hyperbole, I couldn't have done it without her. So what we did is we just did what we could. She had, we sent out old school letters to people's mail, like your parents. That helps. They really recommend that if you're doing fundraisers, you make it kind of authentic to who you are. So ideally, we were going to do bourbon and barbecue. And so we did a fundraiser that brought in about 12 grand. And then you have some individual asks. There's a gala at the end where they announce the winner. And so all the silent auction items that you bring in will still go to your campaign.
Oh,
so
cool.
I had some good sports stuff.
Nice.
And then I have one of my best girlfriends in Atlanta's mom had recently died of multiple myeloma, and I had watched that. And so when I was nominated, I reached out to her and just said, you know, would you be okay with me kind of doing this in the spirit of your mom? Because I knew her. And are you up for supporting it? And she said, absolutely. So that's how we, Nancy and I, did it. And then Nancy has her own network. And, you know, she did a lot of personal asks. She had connections with trying to get, you know, the free food for the barbecue.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. So for us, we did it in a really just a short amount of time, and we just hustled.
Wow. That's a lot of work in 10 weeks.
It was. And you know, and I said, this is crazy. I just started this business. I don't know that this is a good idea. I really don't think it's a good idea, because if I have free time, I should be hustling. I mean, because I kill what I eat. That's it. That's
right.
How you pay your bills.
Yep.
And then I just thought, what do you...
You're like a sales guy, you know? I kill what I... that's sales that's guys right. Talk that way,
right.
Too.
I know. Yeah. I said that to my mom the other day. She goes, that sounds a little barbaric. Honey. But so I just, again, I mean, you think you need money for research to cure people, and
yeah.
Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, a high percentage goes to that. Anyways, it was just one of those things. And Jack Kelly calls and says, sorry, I had wanted to get your thoughts on whether or not you wanted to run. We just buried my mom. I'm sorry. It's been a while. And I'm thinking, who am I to not do that?
Wow. No, that's, anyway. That's great. And then, so you mentioned the mentoring and with young people. How does that work?
It kind of depends. You know, I get asked to speak at schools, for example, whether it's USD or San Diego State, or then I've got people who will say, my niece wants to be a broadcaster, whatever that looks like. Can
right.
you talk to them? A lot of that is. And I do have some clients, some young broadcasting clients. The challenge there is that I would never charge them full price, because I never had any money. So I do that, and sometimes it just turns into mentoring.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And the Carlsbad High School has a really amazing broadcasting department and studio. They're actually well known throughout the country. So I've gone and done some workshops for them, and then I'll get some stuff from those young kids and saying, hey, I want to do this, or can you do that? Read this, or tell me what I should do about finding a job here.
So that's very cool.
That is really cool. I mean, I think that kind of even just the, hey, my niece, you know, wants to get into broadcasting. I remember when I was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 years old, I'd always been fascinated with computers. And I got a chance to talk to a lady who was, like, in retrospect, a junior programmer at, like, at NRAD, the Naval Research Facility. And I don't know, maybe we talked for 20 minutes, but I think about that interview today, like 30 years later, I still think about it and some of the questions I asked, some of the things she said, and how it's, you know, shaped my career. And I don't even really know her name. You know, she was like a friend of my parents or whatever. You know, there was some friend of a friend. And so it is crazy how much impact just a little conversation like that can have on a person's life.
Right.
You know, really can be transformative. So it's so cool that you take the time to do that.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, and it's one. Sometimes it's just one thing that they need to know that they had no idea.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you have this whole vast knowledge of the industry and everything, and so just helping them go in the right direction,
right,
or not waste a bunch of time doing something maybe that it's like don't go do all that. Like you need to hustle, or you need to get experience, or focus on this stuff instead of just some of these, I feel like in the tech space, people can get sidetracked on all kinds of certifications or something, and it's like, well, but you've got enough certifications. You need to get doing some stuff. Right.
Yeah. That's where the rubber hits the road.
But that's good advice.
I was talking to someone last night about that wants to get into management, and they're in accounting, and they want to get into management and accounting. And they're like, thinking about, management courses and all this stuff. And I'm going, you don't need management courses. Like you already know, you're already fantastic with people. You've got the intuition. You understand how to put yourself in other people's shoes. I mean, I was kind of going through it all with her, and I was just like, I don't know that you're going to learn what you think you're going to learn in a management class. I've been to a lot of management classes and pointing people in the right direction is huge.
But we need better managers.
Yes.
Because they can really make or break your...
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Agreed.
They can make or break your spirit.
I don't manage anybody anymore. It's really... It's super weird.
That is bizarre,
I guess. I mean, Jeffrey kind of...
You manage me.
I manage Jeffrey. Yeah. With
you guys manage? Do you guys manage each other?
Kind of, yeah.
We have a weird like managing relationship where like he manages down and I manage up, and like we manage to make a mess of it half the time.
Well, remember, I know that because I used to go between offices and say and figure out. Okay, well, Paul just told me to do this. Do you recommend that I? Well, okay, well, I'll talk to Paul. Or yeah, okay, do whatever Paul says. Or
I like when it was like basically would sort of say the opposite thing, and you're just like, you guys are both saying the opposite thing. It's like, let's see.
That's not uncommon.
Yeah. Okay, so Katie, I had one last thing I wanted to see if you were up for, and you could tell us no, but we need a new intro to our podcast, and we would love to have your voice on it.
Like, kind of...
We'll play you what we have now.
The TNT?
Yeah. You heard it.
Okay. I heard that.
Yeah. And it's good.
I was impressed.
It's good. It's actually one of our sales guys upstairs that did it for us. But I thought I would love to have your voice on there.
I'll do it.
Would you be up for that?
Sure.
Okay. So do you want us to play? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I mean, do you have a pen, a paper? Do you want to write? Well, how do you do this?
This is like media coaching, right?
Well, wait,
now.
Let me hear it and let me see if I can just.
You could just do it. Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to Technology and Things. Technology and Things?
Yeah.
Welcome to the TNT podcast, Technology and Things. Your hosts are Jeff Kruger and Paul Ferraro. Let me think.
This is great to see Katie stumbling over it.
I know.
It's now I'm gaining confidence as a broadcaster.
Right. That's like, part of it, right? That's part of I was saying to somebody that I was filling in. I fill in at Channel 8 doing sports, like as you guys know. And I was there a couple months ago and I got up to the desk and I got nerves. I had butterflies in my stomach and I'd been doing it for 20 plus years. And so I try to tell people, listen, don't try to get rid of your nerves. It's a good thing.
Well, yeah, I actually had a question about that because I get nervous sometimes when I was nervous, you know, once in a while, it's like, actually every time, really, if I was totally honest, every time I'm like, I want to make sure that it goes well and, you know, I don't say a bunch of stupid stuff and,
right.
You know, the guest walks away feeling like it was a good experience, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I was going to ask you about like, what do you do with the nerves?
I think, well, what I try to tell, the nerves are a good thing. First mm-hmm. of all, you want to shift that mentality that it's bad because they're good.
Yeah.
Because you're doing something that you love and you're doing something that you're excited about.
Yeah.
If it wasn't that big of a deal, you wouldn't be nervous. And I mean, who wants to live their life like that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind
of, that's a good way to think about it.
Especially when I talk to people like you or my clients who want to go from good to great. People that are competitive and have had some success, but want to be really great. And a lot of that is about the details. So that's the first thing is to change the mindset of the nerves from bad to good. This is game on kind of thing. I mean, mm-hmm. there's still professional athletes that barf before they take the field because
really?
They're nerves. Wow. So that's what I try to tell people. And preparation's key. You know, I do get a little pushback because I know a lot of people like to do things extemporaneously, and that's fine if that's your gift. But make sure if you're doing it extemporaneously that you're not running on and on and on and putting us all to sleep.
Yeah.
And so my program is really, really based around a lot of preparation. And what preparation does is help you know how you're going to sound and what you're going to try to do. And so that's going to help you be more confident. That's
yeah,
the
no,
other part
yeah,
of that.
If you know what you're talking about.
If you know what you're talking about and
for
you
sure.
know and you're not and you're clear on your goals so that you're not kind of you know, going on this filler word journey right down down.
That's what we do here. We try to have a sort of an outline of what we're gonna do and then when we're done with it, we're good.
Right.
And we're not gonna go on for 4 hours.
Right.
We've kind of covered everything we wanted to cover and then I go, oh yeah, we're good. We didn't miss a whole bunch of stuff.
That's good.
But yeah, we've tried doing it the wing it way, and it has mixed results.
Yes.
Not the best, usually.
Well, I think the wing it works. I mean, the format of podcast is, as you know, allowing a little more of the wing it.
Yes.
Right? But I think, you know, it's all about how you want to come across.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always interesting when you have more time. Sometimes you find things out about the guests that you wouldn't have had time to find out before.
Yeah. You that's know. True. Like right now. See, we just found out a bunch more about you.
Right.
That's right.
That was part of my magic here. See?
See, yeah. You're a good interviewer.
It's in the process.
Join us for the TNT podcast, Technology and Things, with your host Jeff Kruger and Paul Ferraro.
I like it. See that?
I think you need to put Paul's name first before mine. I feel more comfortable that way.
Is he still your boss?
I mean, like he actually works at Evotech. that would be one. That would be one. I kind of labor for free over here.
He's
I do it for fun.
He's like a subcontractor to me.
Okay, got it.
For no pay.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
We have an arrangement.
Okay. Welcome everybody to the TNT podcast, Technology and Things. We've got two awesome hosts that will come to you every week and give you the best and most exciting information in technology. The first host is Paul Ferraro, Evotech's consultant extraordinaire, and Jeffrey Kruger, the Aztec's biggest fan.
I love it. I love it. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, it's good. It's you got a great voice.
Thank you.
So
thank you. That's just from years of trying to sound like a man, unfortunately.
Really?
Well, yes.
Do you have to? Something you work on?
I mean, I think, you know, when I was coming up and doing it, it was a little different. Everyone, as progress goes, people get to be kind of more of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But there was there's a pressure to kind of sound like a man because no one wants to hear a woman's voice is what I was told a couple times. So.
But you've always seemed to have a very natural voice to me. It didn't sound overly manly to me.
Right, right. It's just it's gotten a little deeper.
Really? Mm-hmm. Huh. Did not realize that. Well, could have fooled me.
Yeah. I'm just curious because I remember when cloud was this big deal and you were talking to a lot of your partners about the cloud, but there were so many questions because no one knew what the cloud really is.
Yeah.
But now is the cloud stable and now is it all about AI generally? What's the kind of the hot?
Well, you've touched on the biggest buzzword since the cloud is AI, right? So cloud is real. There was probably a good leading up to it, 7 years of just a lot of talk and nonsense and everything. And I remember actually I did a photo one time with Norm where we were walking on clouds for a magazine.
That was so funny.
I may have seen that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That was so funny.
I've done
funny.
My fair share of media and whatnot.
Yes, you
but
have.
We had to walk in this green screen room where we had to all kind of walk together and then they were going to,
we're going to add the clouds in.
We're going to add the clouds in later.
I love it.
And it actually came out pretty good. I think the way to think about cloud is really, it's just sort of an extension of your data center or your data center. The way I see a lot of customers using it is it's really just, they make it their own. So it's sort of on their network. It's fully integrated and they consume it in that way, especially enterprise customers. You know, small businesses consume it more as a service. So it's just like Spotify or something. You know, you just sign up for it and you get the service. And so with AI and machine learning and all that, that's sort of become the new thing that everybody has to have. Right. I mean, if you have a product today, it better have some AI component to it. It's kind of silly in a way. I mean,
it's part of our business that always drives me or had driven me totally crazy, because no matter what point in time you look at in technology, there's like about 500 different cool innovations going on. Mm-hmm. But there'll be one or two that gathers everyone's attention. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that those one or two aren't really cool. You know, like, yeah, the cloud is a big deal. Virtualization came before that. It was a big deal. Some of these are big deals. Some of them aren't as big a deal as they sound. But what will happen is everyone talks about that one or two things at that given time. Mm-hmm. And like Paul said, everything you do, you know, you better have the AI or whatever. And it's like, it's ridiculous because it may not apply to every scenario, but right. It probably doesn't. Right. You know, like it applies to some scenarios. Like AI is great for self-driving cars. You know, I don't know that it applies itself to broadcasting as well. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe there's some AI editing software out there. But like, you know, if I was working for the company that made these soundboards or made recording software or whatever, I don't know. I know I'd have some CIO coming in going like, what are you doing with AI? And I'd be like, oh God, like it doesn't apply to us, you know?
Right. And that's what I know you guys had to do. That was a pressure for you when you were at Qualcomm, where you've got all these vendors coming in with the coolest stuff that's safe and affordable. And you have to parse through whether it's worth taking a look at and disrupting your whole team to make a big change. Right?
Yeah. And that's the same thing that's going on today, right? Is we try to navigate that. It's like sort out the what's actually going to make a difference, mm-hmm. versus just be a lot of work and not really change your situation. That's still, I mean, it's sort of the same thing. It's just different stuff.
Right.
Separate the hype from the
yeah.
That's material.
Still, drilling that's, down. Yeah.
That's still critical. And it's just it's an onslaught of new, you know,
stuff
that's like, this is going to be the best thing ever. And it's like, well, how many people do you have at your company? Oh, we've got 20 products not really out yet. And you're like, okay, I mean, why don't you give me a call back in a year or so? I mean, we can't go take this to our customers with hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
In our previous job, Paul and I got lots of startups that came to us, a lot of storage businesses that wanted to sell to our company. And so they would come and talk about things. And at the time, like every pitch we knew was going to include like three things. It was going to include, you know, SSDs are replacing hard drives. It was going to include hierarchical storage management. I don't know. There was like three buzzwords, and like literally every pitch came with them. And we just got so tired of it because there was no substance to the product. All they did was say, here are these buzzwords. Let's go build something that we can pitch with it. And when we found there were one or two startups that we'd run into that had a truly unique thing they were doing. And sometimes it aligned with some of those buzzwords and sometimes it didn't. But those were the ones that really shined for us, was like, okay, these guys actually have got something they're doing that's like unique and different.
I mean, the biggest thing that we see these days is just more about consistency and standardization in your environment. So many companies have done so many acquisitions and things that they have this just big mess of technology. So they could just pick any of it, and if they used it throughout their business, things would be better. Mm-hmm. It's not really about that, you know, oh, this new whiz-bang thing. It's more like you could take the thing that's been out for 5 years if you just implement it properly in your business. And I think that's you know, just happening so much with the number of acquisitions that have happened.
Right.
These companies just can't keep up.
Right.
The IT departments can't keep up. It's like, you know, half the time it's like we bought a company, then there's less staff because they want to save money, so they cut staff, and so then you end up with less people with more tech, mm-hmm. and then you can't get out of that. Mm-hmm. You just keep digging a bigger hole, right?
Ouch!
And so you see that a lot,
yeah.
And so that's
still.
That's definitely a big area where we help customers a lot with that kind of thing.
Parse through that stuff.
Yep. And just help them get it done. It's like they already know what they want to do, but so they just don't have the people or the resources to go kind of make it happen. So helping people kind of go execute on strategies or programs that they already kind of want to do.
Right.
But they haven't been able to get their arms around it.
Right.
So
that's good value for sure.
No, it's cool. Well, thank you so much, Katie. Would you take us out today?
3, 2, 1. Thank you for listening to another edition of the TNT podcast, Technology and Things, hosted by Paul Ferraro and Jeff Kruger. We'll see you next time.
Beautiful.
That was so
good. That's a professional right there.
That's good, yeah.
Well, thank you, Katie.
Thanks, guys. Awesome to see you.
Awesome to see you.
Oh, that was great.